Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Modis, and I'm your host, a Filipino-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you will hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. Be inspired as you listen to these up-close conversations and be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening, friends. So today, I'm very excited to introduce you to our guest of honor, Angela Provenzano. Angela is a third-year doctoral student at The Ohio State University studying occupational therapy. She has had her fair share of travels, as she is a Connecticut native and attended Mississippi State University, earning a bachelor's degree in educational psychology with a Spanish minor. She started an online support group for kinship caregivers, Kinship Caregivers Connect, in June of 2020. This was at the height of the pandemic with the Albert Schweitzer Fellowship. She developed a passion for serving kinship caregivers due to personal and research experiences. Seeing an acute need for this often forgotten population, she has continually led the support group since and expanded the group, partnering with a state-funded community agency, OhioCan. Angela is also employed as a graduate research associate in the social work department, where she conducts research on kinship caregivers from a systems perspective. For Angela's doctoral capstone project in January, she has partnered with the Ohio Statewide Family Engagement Center, a translational research center, to design and implement trainings for professionals in the school system to promote a better understanding and support of kinship families within the system. Angela's support group has reached university-wide and statewide recognition, and she was recently awarded the Jane K. Smith Outstanding Student Award from the Ohio Occupational Therapy Association, as well as the Engaged Scholars Grant, the Scholarship of Excellence Award, the Legacy Award, and the Height Family Scholarship. Outside of these accolades, Angela finds continual passion and purpose in supporting such a special population and has embraced the idea of being an uncommon OT. So without further ado, I'd like to present to you Angela Provenzano. Welcome, Angela.
Hi, it's so great to be here.
Thank you so much for spending the time with us. You are our very first doctoral student guest on the show. Yay.
Yay.
So I love that, especially because I think it's a great way to really plant the seed and the idea, right? For other OTD students out there with the type of work that you're doing. Again, we're illustrating uncommon OT work. So I'm super excited to talk about your, you know, specialty. But before we delve into all of that, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. Well, as I said, it's such a pleasure to be here. So I guess there's a lot of things I could talk about, but the most exciting thing is I'll actually be graduating in May with my doctorate degree. So I don't know when you'll be listening to this, but I only have a couple weeks left and then I'll be an OTD. But I am happy to still be your first student here. I will claim that title.
Well, but you actually just made it. In a couple of weeks, you wouldn't have been a student anymore.
I know. I just made the cut. I just made it. But yeah, I've moved all over the place, originally from Connecticut, now a student at Ohio State. I'm also a fiance and we'll be getting married in June. So as you can imagine, it's been a crazy time. Yes, but very exciting time too. I decided to do all the things at once. And my favorite occupations, I'm a new kitty parent. We have two twin boy cats and we're very obsessed with them. I didn't understand being a cat person until I got cats myself. And then I also am an avid poetry writer, just something I've liked since I've been growing up, and now that I have more time, I'm trying to do it more often. So, yeah, that's just a couple things about me.
Oh, thanks for sharing so much. So much to celebrate in your life. So I want to congratulate you on those, first of all. And so much to congratulate in your professional life, too. Can you tell us a little bit about your uncommon OT work and the population that you serve and perhaps some of the needs that you're addressing?
Sure, I'd love to. So I work with kinship caregivers, which is a term a lot of people haven't heard of, but once I describe kinship care, a lot of people are familiar with that. And that's when a relative who's not the biological parent of a child is their primary caregiver. And the most common examples we have are grandparents raising grandchildren, but there can also be aunts and uncles raising nieces and nephews, cousins, siblings, great-grandparents, great-aunts, great-uncles, and also fictive kin, so even just family friends that take in a child. Mm. And kinship caregivers often take in children as an alternative for the child going into foster care, because yes, kids do have better outcomes in kinship care living with their relatives. But with that, they definitely don't receive comparable supports compared to foster families. So they do have a lot of needs. And you can imagine a child who's experienced trauma does have healing to do in a way and does need those supports, like mental mm-hmm. health supports, maybe even sensory supports. And just having that stable environment with a caregiver can make such a difference. But we also need to support that caregiver. And mm-hmm. kinship families already can be more disadvantaged financially, economically, and not having that same support as foster families can be really devastating in a way. And then from an OT perspective, we think of like just a huge life and role transition that literally happens. And sometimes like a day, like they get a call and have to decide if they'll take this kid in or the kid will go into foster care. So I really appreciate like kind of having that OT lens and mm-hmm. helping other people to realize like, this is a big deal becoming a parent again, especially as a grandparent, you never plan to do it again. Yes. So their life really changes from there. So it's always a long answer, but yes, I work with kinship caregivers and I started a support group for kinship caregivers right after mm-hmm. COVID. And it's one of the first online support groups, at least in Ohio, that have ever occurred. And it's still running. We meet twice a week and I do a mix of like peer support. So caregivers just coming together and supporting one another, because social support has been shown to be very important for this population who feel mm-hmm. very alone in their role a lot of times. And then I also have some side things related to kinship care that you mentioned. So I'm working for Dr. Ramona Denby, and she's actually the Dean of Social Work at the University of North Carolina. She was at Ohio State University, and she mm-hmm. does a lot of research on kinship care from a systems perspective. And I really enjoy just learning more about like evidence-based strategies for supporting kinship families and how really we can meet their needs on that bigger level. So that's been great too. And I guess I'm interdisciplinary in nature, but I embrace it. And I think understanding the social systems behind the clients we're working with is really important too.
Yeah. And I love how you're approaching working with this population really from a number of angles, right? You're coming at from a research perspective, and here you are offering your support group. Thanks for describing for us the specifics of the population that you serve, because, you know, you think about extended family and, you know, I love how you gave all of those examples of who this kinship caregiver might be.
Yeah.
You also mentioned sort of life roles and sort of, you know, quick transitions, right? Can you share with us some of the needs that you've been addressing with your support group?
Sure. So we have a mix of peer support, but I also love to have different speakers and experts come in to provide information, like psychoeducational information on different topics. Because when you think about foster care, foster families do go through training where they get like formal information about strategies for raising children who've experienced trauma and mm-hmm. other things. But kinship caregivers don't always get that information. So my goal is always to increase knowledge and increase caregiver self-efficacy too. And also them knowing they're not alone is really the most powerful thing. But we do cover a lot of different topics. So I'll have 2 to 4 speakers come in each month. And some topics we'll cover are like childhood trauma, childhood mental health, trauma-informed parenting strategies, or just parenting strategies in general, the mm-hmm. importance of like attachment and bonding and ways to facilitate that, I've definitely had OT professors come in and talk about like sensory, meeting kids' sensory needs and kind of seeing what may be behind a kid's behavior. But then more on like the caregiver side of things, we do talk a lot about self-care, like healthy lifestyles and strategies. And also we've done mindfulness, which was a really big hit. So really building up their own coping strategies as caregivers, because they do go through a lot of hard things, and helping them to believe in themselves and just have that knowledge to equip them in the situations that they bring. But the most powerful thing is when they come together and offer support and advice to one another, because only people who have been through it can really understand what it's like. So.
So can you give us an idea of what this group might look like, right? Is it a virtual group? Is it an in-person group? How large are they usually? And, you know, you already gave us some examples of the topics that you kind of cover. And, you know, are they kind of ongoing? Are they required to participate? Is it kind of a drop-in kind of thing?
Sure. So the group is statewide. It's open to any kinship caregiver in the state, and it is free since I've gotten funding from a state organization, which allows me to do it and offer it for free to caregivers, which is great. So we meet twice a week, which keeps me very busy, but I wanted to offer two different time options. So we have a Tuesday morning meeting time and then a Thursday evening meeting time, because every caregiver's schedule is different. And I'm very open about it. Like, come when you can. There's definitely no requirement. Like I said, we're working with a population who's already overburdened and busy. There's a lot going on. So just being really flexible with their schedule. Some people can call in on their phone if they don't want to log in on their computer. Like I said, it is online. And I always say, if there's kids in the background, like, who cares? Like, it doesn't matter, if as long as you can make it and listen in and participate as much as you can. But it's been so cool to see just like the genuine connections that can grow even on an online platform. I'm sure you've seen that even just by like running this podcast. And even though caregivers are from all different parts of the state and all have different experiences, they really look forward to seeing each other every week or whenever they can come. So it has been growing, which is exciting. We now have like between 10 and 15 caregivers at each meeting, which is really it's really the maximum a support group should be. So sustainability wise, I'm glad people are showing up, but then I also have like, how can I make this even bigger and accessible to more people? But I've really, really enjoyed the virtual platform. We did have one in-person meeting for Kinship Caregiver Month in September last year, and that was very cool. So I think doing something on like an annual or biannual basis in person is very valuable. But I think the virtual platform takes away a lot of barriers for caregivers, like having to take like a whole like 2 hours out of the day, including transportation and finding childcare. And it takes a lot of energy to get out of the house in time. So I think it is a good fit for some caregivers. And I mean, there's other caregivers who prefer in-person support groups, and that's why those are there too.
Yes. And, you know, there's also the financial cost of having to travel and come in person, right? Including childcare costs too. So thanks for bringing up those excellent points. So now we see how large these groups are, where they take place, the kinds of things that you talk about. How do you get your group members? How do you get your referrals?
Yeah, so this was something I was most nervous about when I started the support group, because historically, although kinship support groups are so widely needed, it's so hard to get people to show up because of some of the barriers I mentioned. So I knew I really had to, you know, get in touch with people one-on-one as much as possible. And so they could get to know me and feel comfortable showing up to something online, because that can be an uncomfortable thing for a lot of people. And really the key to why I've been able to grow this group is the strong grassroots community connections I've been able to make. And right away I connected with an amazing organization. They're called the Ohio Grandparent Kinship Coalition, and they were my official partners in starting the support group. So they've been connected to grand families since they've existed in the late 90s, and have like a really big email list and just like such great connections to that community. A lot of them are caregivers themselves. And what I didn't mention is I'm from a kinship family myself, where my grandparents raised my cousin and now my parents are raising my cousin. So I guess he's like my kinship brother. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to let people know that, like, I care about this because of my own family, but also I want you all to feel comfortable sharing your stories and experiences. So I started just sending out emails with the Ohio Grandparent Kinship Coalition, kind of started growing my own email list, and then I transitioned into creating a website where I put all of the content that I create on the support group. So I've been tried to be very intentional about archiving anything. Like, I'll record any presentation and post that on the website. I create flyers now with the monthly meeting times, post that on our website. And then mm-hmm. now that I have an email list that's grown to like 120 caregivers, so I'll send weekly emails about the support group lineup for that week. And then I really also try to send out resources as they come up. So there's always like a valuable takeaway from reading the newsletter or the email. And then beyond that, just connecting to caregivers one-on-one whenever a caregiver reaches out on the website and say they might be interested. Like, I always value a phone call just to get to know them and so they can get to know me, and mm-hmm. always letting them know, like, I'm there if you want to talk or reach out. Like, trying to become across as approachable, because
approachable, huh?
Yeah. And when you're stuck in a lot of systems that aren't really working for you, it can be like natural to be distrustful of different things. So really saying, like, I'm here for you, like, everything I'm doing is for you as caregivers. And that's always my goal too. So just really keeping it client-centered and using that personal connection to let caregivers know that you care and you're there for them.
Yeah. And, you know, this comes from a personal place for you. So I'm sure that your work, that really comes across in the work that you're doing and how you're offering your services. What a wonderful resource you're offering these individuals. And, you know, again, to really know that need, right? Because it's coming from your own personal struggles with your family. Are there any other resources like this in Ohio, or are you it?
I've seen in-person support groups, and which tend to be smaller and more like county locally based, which makes sense. I haven't seen online support groups, at least to this capacity, online and statewide support groups. I do want to highlight Ohio Can as well, which is the Ohio Kinship and Adoption Navigators Program. They're a new statewide program that helps caregivers navigate all the systems they need to. And they also refer a lot of people to me. And they're also my funding source as well. So I'm very grateful to them. And they're doing a great job at helping to meet the overall needs of caregivers in Ohio. And I can kind of be one referral for them for anyone in the state looking for a support group.
Awesome. Maybe it's a great way to segue into the funding money matters portion of the conversation. You mentioned Ohio Can. Yay, Ohio Can, for providing funding for Angela's project. But yeah, can you tell us more details about that? What is this, you know, what does it cost to run, to start such a program? And how were you able to secure funding? Any details you can provide?
Sure. So this started as a fellowship. So that was my original source of funding, and that was like a very small amount where I wasn't really fully getting compensated for my time, but it was something I wanted to do, and that really helped me to start the group and grow it from there. So I had a full year to develop it before approaching Ohio Can, which is a larger state-funded organization that was looking for a support group. So I think that helped me out already having that concept like fully put into action. And the good thing about a support group is there's not a ton of overhead costs. There are, you know, having a Zoom account, I'm looking to upgrade my computer. Obviously, my time is like the biggest cost, having mm-hmm. my own time to put into that, finding speakers, things like that. But it's not a ton of overhead costs, which is helpful, I guess, from a business perspective. But I've really, truly tried to keep the quality like as the highest level that I can provide and really not ever compromise the quality, the time, the speakers I'm getting, all of that. So I do hold tight to that. But it was interesting, like I was in graduate school when I was looking for funding for this, talking to Ohio Can, and it was a very intimidating process to, you know, think about what I thought I was worth myself, what I thought this product was worth, how much they think they would be worth, like really advocating for the value of a support group. Mm-hmm. But they were very great to work with. And that's really where my community mentors came in. The Ohio Grandparent Kinship Coalition, they've been a nonprofit organization for a long time, and like have dealt with bigger contracts like this. So I really leaned on them as mentors to guide me through this process, because it can be really scary as a student. And I was able to get a fiscal agent who kind of can get the money and then give it to me. And I'm working on becoming either like an LLC or nonprofit, so I'll have like the self-sustaining capabilities. But it honestly happened so fast. It was kind of wild. And all I knew was after the fellowship ended, I'm like, I'm going to keep this going until something else came up, because I thought there's no reason for me to give it up. And I knew the quality was there. And then this opportunity came up, and like, I don't want to say it fell in my lap. I knew I worked for it, but it was really like the right place, right time for both of us. And they do have really fair funding, and they are taking very good care of me, I will say. So it was cool to see myself advocate for myself and like see that be respected too.
Yes. Really, you know, understanding your value, charging it, right? And getting paid for it. That's really the whole, that's all of it, you know, from start to finish. Because a lot of times we speak our value, whether we actually get paid for it is another, right? So I just want to give you a round of applause and just so impressed with, you know, again, what you've been able to accomplish at this stage in your OT career, right? And it's precisely why I wanted to interview you for the podcast, is, you know, there's really no limitations here, right? Mm-hmm. Again, we look for a need, we find ways to address those needs, and here you are finding ways to get funded to address those needs.
Yeah.
So congratulations to you on, you know, what you've accomplished so far. It's quality, you know, quality, unique, and much needed services that you're offering out there.
Thank you.
So thank you too for sharing a little bit about the funding. Is this something, so this is a grant, right? And this is something that you'll need to apply for on a yearly basis?
Yes. So technically it's like subcontracted. I don't know if grant is the same word or not, but it's a year contract. So every year it'll be reevaluated. And I mean, I even have to think for myself, like what future directions I really see the support group going. And I'll plan to do that on a yearly basis. So I do, hopefully we'll be funded for the next year with Ohio Can, and I definitely want to continue to work with them, but also think like where I could maybe be able to take this on like a national level or even just beyond Ohio. So I have a lot of things to think through, all exciting opportunities, but I definitely want to push myself to see kind of how far this can go. And I did just move back to Connecticut. I've moved a lot around a lot. So, certainly I can see it working in other states too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I love that, again, the virtual space allows for you to really be anywhere and to keep the consistency going, right? I think that's also important, is the consistency of the support being there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So wonderful. And, you know, I was just thinking that now that you've got one funding source, I can't imagine it being too difficult to convince someone else, right? Because that you've already set precedent.
I'm hopeful. It's cool to have, like, it's not directly state funding, but it's coming from state funding. So it is cool to have such like a big name funding the support group. And I feel like that will be a good leveraging point whenever I decide to expand this further on and maybe approach other funding sources too.
Yes. I'm already wondering, is there a Connecticut Can? are they a nation? You know, does every state have a kinship network?
Every state has something. It's better in some states than others. But every state does have something. And there's also national organizations that serve kinship families too that I'm thinking about as well. So we'll see.
Fantastic. So we've talked about money matters. Maybe we can switch gears a little bit to any common myths or misconceptions that, you know, you'd like to maybe demystify about the work that you do.
Sure. Well, I think the first one is probably just like the phase of life that I'm in and we've talked about. Like, I think a myth would be you can't start anything until after you graduate, or you have to wait until you have that degree to really start pursuing your interests and passions. And I even bought into that a little bit, and I've surprised myself in how much I can do even while still being a student. So that's definitely a myth I want to debunk. And any students listening, like, start early. Once you know where your passion is, start as early as you can. And even at the beginning, if you're not getting compensated for it, or if it doesn't seem valuable, what seeds you plant in the beginning can grow into things. And then by the time you're at capstone, if you're doing a doctorate degree, or by the time you're at graduation, you'll have a lot more leverage to be able to do the things you want to do, especially if they are uncommon. Compared to waiting until after you graduate. And then you do need a job that makes money. So embrace the student life while you have it, and push yourself to do those things, and you can make it work. And I think it's easy to get caught up in like tests and grades and all that. And although I think those are all important, I think following what your interests are and finding what that is equally as important too.
I agree. You mentioned mentorship earlier. In fact, different types of mentors. Did you rely or lean into any OT mentors?
Yes, but as I mentioned, I go to Ohio State University, and I've had great mentorship there. I was the first one kind of in kinship care specifically, but a lot of professors have experience with like starting programs and things like that. And when I applied for the fellowship, Dr. Robinson was my faculty advisor. So she really helped me and built the confidence within myself to start the group, because it was a very scary thing, like showing up the first meeting and even being like, will anyone come? So having that support meant a lot within the OT program. And I think I've had almost every professor come and talk about a topic that they specialize in to the support group, because so many things can relate to kinship care. So it's been really cool to have the support of the OT program and professors. And then I've been invited to come and do lectures on kinship care, like with first and second year students. Mm-hmm. And I came in and did a lecture on like running groups for a mental health course. So it's been really cool to kind of have that room to collaborate and see professors as colleagues as well, and supporters and mentors. So that really made a big difference.
Yeah. So that brings another angle to your kinship care work. You're teaching OTs and future OTs about the specialty and how we can be of service.
Yes. And my capstone project, not to get too off topic, I've done a lot of different things. It's hard to keep track of. But for my capstone project, which I just wrapped up, that was really focused on teaching, but more in a different sense, where I developed an online professional development with the Ohio Statewide Family Engagement Center, and presented to like about 400 school professionals about how school professionals can understand kinship families, understand their needs, and also strategies for supporting them in the school. So really taking on that consultative role. Mm-hmm. And I saw the school systems as a really big opportunity. So it was very interdisciplinary, which was cool. But I really enjoy the interpersonal connections with caregivers, but how can we bring and advocate on the next level? So that was a cool teaching experience as well.
Oh, wow. Again, I'm just super, super impressed with everything that you're doing at this level of your OT career, right? And even more so, I want to just kind of highlight the excitement and enthusiasm in your voice. And I'm looking at your face right now. No one else can see it when they start listening to this, but it's, you know, this is, you're passionate about this type of work. And, you know, this is such a great example for other OTDs out there who really want to pursue something that, you know, that's meaningful to them. So thank you for being on the podcast and for sharing your journey with us. Do you have any advice for any future OTDs or any other OTs who may be interested in bridging into your type of specialty?
Sure. So as I said, kinship care is very niche. So there is a big learning curve with learning about what's like underlying there. But I mean, mental health in general, and even if you wanted to start a support group, I would say the first piece of advice is find a really strong community mentor. I think as students, it's hard to have, you know, those strong connections to a community. I was new to Ohio when I started the support group, so I really knew no one there. So don't be afraid to like cold call, cold email people within your interest area. That's how I met like my starting partner, Ohio Grandparent Kinship Coalition. I literally sent like a cold email and was like, I want to apply for this fellowship and I need a community mentor. And they were so perceptive towards it. I think we set up a meeting the next week. So really, in order to start something like this, you can't be afraid to step out of your comfort zone and ask for that mentorship, because mm-hmm. I really needed all the mentorship that I got. And also reach out to OT professors or other OT professionals that might have some experience in the area. And then I think the second piece of advice is to just keep going. And it can be scary to start something from scratch, but if you show up every day, that consistency is really what will separate you from other people doing it. So just showing up every day, even if you don't know what the result is, and having faith that that hard work you're putting in now will pay off later. And it was so cool to see that play out for me. Like, I was surprised by it in a sense, because you never know what's going to happen. But I knew if I showed up and just like gave my best effort, but also I'm always open to change. So like for support groups, if something's not working, like I added another support group time so more people could come to the groups. Or I realized I was having too many speakers and there wasn't time for peer discussion. So then I cut down the amount of speakers. So just really always listening to the needs of your population and never thinking that you have it completely figured out. And being flexible when you have to, I think has really allowed me to like flourish and change into the support group that it is now. And I know I'll continue to change. I am always looking for that change, and thinking about what's next too. And then for running support groups specifically, I would just say showing up as yourself and being as authentic as possible and really allowing the caregivers that space for them to share and connect with one another. I think in occupational therapy, there's this idea, which it's a good idea, but that like we do the change, we do the fixing, we do the helping, when really the key to a support group is facilitating others, helping others in a similar situation. So I really do try to provide the resources, but also take a step back and realize caregivers are the experts of their own situation. So mm-hmm. I think creating that safe and accepting space has been like the bread and butter to this whole support group beyond anything else. And that's been really cool to be able to do, and also show up as my own self and just, you know, be honest about advice that I can provide, advice that I can't provide, and share my own story. And when I ask questions, answer the questions too. And it really does start to feel like a real community. So yeah, just some advice.
Oh, well, thanks so much for all of that advice. And again, for sharing your incredible work. You're really tapping into a need that was there and was not, may not have been even recognized, right? And because of your own personal journeys, you had an inkling as to what these individuals may have been going through. And now here you are providing consistent service for this group, and in fact, getting funding for it. And in fact, now teaching other professionals, you know, about the specialty. And, you know, so I see this going nowhere but up, right? Going nowhere but larger. And I want to congratulate you on this endeavor.
Thank you. It's been a joy. Blood, sweat, and tears, but it's been a joy. And kind of what you're saying, I guess, as a last piece of advice that you reminded me of, if you see a need, go after it. Like, see that as an opportunity. Don't be waiting for someone else to pick it up. And I think that's also why I've been able to take this far, is because there has been such a need for it. So look for those gaps, look for those needs, and don't just wait for someone else to fill them, because that's what will bring you far too.
Yeah. And maybe there's one kind of final question that we may not have covered yet that might be important to cover. So here you are, an OTD student. Are there any OT skills that you think come into play in this particular role, right? Are there any OT skills that make you more successful in this role? Maybe that's a better way of kind of phrasing it.
Absolutely. I think there's so much from OT school that I use on a day-to-day basis doing this. I think on like an interpersonal level, really, like we took a therapeutic use of self class and learning to create that safe and open environment and trusting environment for clients. Like I said, I think that's been very important. But beyond that, like the concept and the framework that I've learned in school has transferred over so well to understanding the needs of caregivers, deciding what professionals to bring in. So I can look at their occupational role change, as we would say in OT, and say them changing their roles and routines overnight, like that's a very difficult thing. So how can I provide supports for them to, or make suggestions for ways that they can adjust their routines to, you know, build in time for bonding with the kid or build in time for self-care. So we do talk a lot about roles and routines, and this is all like embedded into conversation. And I really, as I mentioned, focused on self-efficacy too. So those things we learn in OT school about building up your clients and helping them believe in yourself. We do a lot of self-affirmations, and I try to ask questions where caregivers really have to reflect on their own strengths and what they bring to the table. And that's really important for building self-efficacy too. And then, like I said, I've had so many OT professionals come in and talk about like sensory for a kid who might have experienced trauma, what that might look like, and like strategies to provide there. And a lot of these kids do end up having higher needs or even maybe a diagnosis of a disability and need those extra supports. So when I presented in the school system, I talked a lot about like kind of what those supports could look like, or why having supports in place ahead of time can be important for these kids. So it does tie in so many different ways. And I think just having that understanding of like what a role change, how that can affect literally everything in your life. We talk about that in OT school, really, I think has given me a deeper understanding of kinship care. And then just like this, the why building self-efficacy and having that positive viewpoint can be so important as well.
Yes. Well, thanks for making that connection.
Yes. And we also do like the Kawa model and like mental health stuff I'm sure you're familiar with. So I did a field work in a psychiatric hospital, my level two. So a lot of the like group things, some of the things I talked about there, I use in the support group too. So definitely ties into mental health and the things that we do there.
I love it. And you know, you mentioned a little bit of trauma-informed approaches too.
Yes.
So Angela, if any of our listeners want to connect with you, follow you, find you, support your work, please let us know how we can find you.
Sure. So you can find me on my website, kinshipcaregiversconnect.com. And that's really the website of the support group. And you can see all the different resources we provide. There's a resource page there. To contact me directly, you can email me at angela@kinshipcaregiversconnect.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn. And I am in the process of starting an Instagram page. So it's not published yet, but hopefully by the time this comes out, you can find me there. And that will be Kinship Connect on Instagram. So those are about the places right now.
Well, thank you again for spending the time with us and sharing with us your path thus far. Can't wait to have you back on to talk about chapter 2.
Well, I'll definitely be ready to be here. And thanks so much for this great conversation and all you do, bringing all of us uncommon OTs together. I know I feel less alone in it just listening to your podcast. So we appreciate you too.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot. This is the point, right? It's bringing everyone together and shedding light to the rest of the OT world about the fun, unconventional, and really needed areas where we can be.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
Thank you too.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.